Welcome, everybody. This is the Frontside, the podcast, episode 7. Got that one right this time.
Yeah.
It's a very special episode. We'll run right through the introductory material. We've got Alex. How do you pronounce your name?
Machner, but Machner is fine, too, since most people have to just pronounce it from online.
It's a lot harder to rhyme Machner with stuff, too, because I'm for no reason, I know that.
You guys aren't going to get into it...
I don't know. I have my lyrics. I have my battle rap lyrics sitting right here, but I don't know that I want to launch into it.
Maybe if I loosen up, if I feel comfortable around you guys, I'll just freestyle it and see how that goes against Brandon's prepared stuff.
So for the two people in the world who don't know you as J-Lo's boyfriend, can you tell everyone here in the audience who you are and what makes you so special?
So I guess the most public-y thing I do is work on the Ember Core team, mostly stuff related to the Ember router, which is, I believe, still the best one, that you could use in a client-side JavaScript framework.
it's a hotly contested space.
Yeah. I've kind of branched out beyond that. But that's still sort of my domain, and that's the part that least number of people other than myself understand, which is kind of unfortunate. But other than that, it's just a lot of stuff all over the place. I've done some work on in the handlebars land, and I created Emblem at one point, which is a indentation-based templating language which compiles into sort of a handlebars intermediate AST, so it works with Ember, even though it works with other things too. So it's, if you like Haml or Slim, it's a lot of people get a kick out of using that, even though I actually don't use it anymore because it's kind of hard to get a lot of people behind an open source project if you layer these abstractions like CoffeeScript or Emblem on top of it. So I'm back mostly doing handlebars-y stuff, but Emblem is still a cool thing that I did about a year ago. And I don't know, other than that, well, you know me as just like random Photoshop guy on Twitter. I don't know.
There is some pretty good Photoshops and some pretty terrible ones. And I think when it's the terrible ones, it's not you. I think that's, I hesitate to call him out, but I'm pretty sure that's Stanley. When you see a terrible Photoshop, it's Stanley. And when it's a good Photoshop, it's Alex.
So yeah,
that's how I can tell. I don't know. Like, so clearly you spend your time Photoshopping Tom and Yehuda into places that they should not be.
And yeah, I Photoshopped my way onto Ember Core. It's a little known secret.
It's in our day and age, that's a sleazy way to the top, really.
Yeah, I know my dad once told me that he felt sad that he never got us kids good at golf because golf is a major networking tool. I mean, if you don't like the sport, if you can go out with a CEO and do some golf, cool. But I think I kind of filled that gap with Photoshop.
Yeah, I think it works for you. I would stick with it. So yeah, I have so many questions for you. First off, how old are you really?
27.
Nope. That's incorrect. Actually, the answer was 28.
What?
That's what it says on my cards here.
Who told you that?
I have no cards. I made that.
I thought I explicitly answered you on IRC, but I guess you don't believe any word I say.
It's pretty tough. I got to, you know, I'm a little guarded around you. I apologize for that. But the reason we wanted to talk to you is like we do a podcast, you know, our podcast is sort of, you know, our adventures in running an Ember consultancy. And there aren't too many people doing that at this moment in time. And it doesn't necessarily make us special. It's just what fascinates us. And I think other people that do Ember find some of the same stuff fascinating. And one of the things that we started digging into recently was Router.js just on its own, just like we had a project that a client asked us to do specifically in Backbone, and we said, well, you get a lot more, you know, it's going to take more, but they had some artificial constraints that made it not feasible to use Ember as a whole. And so we said, okay, well, Charles and I argued over this for almost a day. I did not want to drop in an unproven, untested library by you. But you understand, like, it's a vanity technology a little bit to say, hey, I'm going to take this router and drop it into a Backbone project. And by vanity, I mean, it's a vanity project if it's something you blog about after. Like, the way that, you know, some people, hunters, would put, like, a head up on their wall. Like, developers do this crazy thing, and they put a blog post up and, like, hey, we are the people that did the Ember router in a Backbone project, and that there's something about that that scared me a little bit, and it turned out to be a total dream. And so I want to have Charles kind of like, if I don't know, what do you think, like what happened?
Yeah, well, you know, I think we're using the exact same version that we started off on the project. You know, it was something that we pulled down from GitHub, the current version of the time, but we haven't had really any problems with it, like at all.
There were a couple things you had to do.
We did have to patch a little bit to make it work on IE8. That was a requirement that came down, but I think that was related to the ES6 module transpiler using IE8 did not like the default keyword.
But that's pretty much it. We were able to drop it in. So and there are a lot of reasons that we fell in love with it through the course of this. And I know that I got in a little bit of when I say trouble, I mean I got mocked a little bit by people by claiming that you had actually extracted the router.js library, but Yehuda did that. And built it from scratch, I guess, as a standalone library, but hadn't really touched it much in the last year or two, right? Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's a pretty common pattern for Yehuda to sort of get the ball rolling on something that needs to be done, and then since he's such a busy guy, as long as decent people are there to sort of fall in the tracks and develop it into its fully formed idea, that's one way of doing it, and it definitely has worked in the past. It's also a similar story with HTML bars from the Emberland. That's something that Yehuda started, I don't know, a year ago, maybe longer. And it eventually just made sense for other people on core to sort of take over it and even transform it a little away from maybe some of the original technical approaches. But that's sort of like a common thing. And that just happened to be the case of what happened with router.js and sort of me largely driving the stuff behind it, which is like, maybe a year ago, Ember had even longer than a year. I mean, there was an older version of the Ember router that was like a subclass of a state manager, and they were kind of trying to shoehorn too many concepts into it that were more router specific and not really state manager specific. So at one point, they kind of redid the API, and when they did that, that's when they sort of built the router.js microlib. I don't know if that was all Yehuda or Tom Yehuda. It was probably some pairing job, or maybe it was just Yehuda. I'm not sure.
But so has it been? It's been a standalone micro library for over a year. Because
I think so.
Really? Because and that's so.
You don't see a lot of people grabbing it off the shelf.
Yeah. So what version of Ember did it actually? Was it introduced as the standalone library?
I mean, it probably always was. It's just, I mean, there's a few other standalone libraries that if you look, you'll actually find a repository for them. I'm actually not totally sure, but I think even metamorphs, the way that you dynamically insert, you have dynamic portions of a
Backburner and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Some of these things actually have their own repositories and you don't know it. And just router.js, I think, is actually getting a little more popularity because a lot of people see the power of the Ember router, and when they realize, oh, nice, this is this own separate thing. Cool, I want to use it.
I want to dig into that a little bit with you because I think people are starting to wake up to this a little bit, how powerful it is to have a router. But can you kind of explain why having a router in your application is why you think it's important, and how Ember or how router.js is sort of geared toward that?
I think the most important thing is that it's extremely difficult to get URLs working correctly without something like a router driving it. And there's been a lot of kind of poor implementations of the router in the past. So basically, I think the trickiest part about it is that there's one thing to click a button in your app and then wind up with a change in the application state, and now you're on a different page than what you're looking at before. It's another to tie that as well to a URL, because you have to solve the tricky problem of both these actions, like clicking a button in your app can change the kind of visual and application state of your application. Both a clicking a button, and also if somebody just rudely clicks the back button in the middle of you doing something important, the same sort of thing can happen. You have less control over that, and it's really hard to get those two pathways, get control over those kind of two pathways. So before I did a lot of the stuff that I did on router.js, there was a lot of workflows that were really nice if you're just clicking links in your app, clicking buttons, and manually doing these transition twos. But then there's so many cases where you just kind of got screwed by clicking the back button, forward button, and not being able to reason about why things were breaking in your app. So it's really nice to be able to put all those concerns into a router to handle the tricky bits for you and expose only the pieces of the API to let you maintain sanity.
You're saying that routing concern is basically, it's very difficult to manage all of the corner cases and not break the back button and not break URL routing in an app when users do unexpected things like cancel something in the middle of loading a loading state or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. The combination of the multiple pathways that can cause transitions in your app and handling asynchronous stuff is very, 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 very difficult.
Okay. So, Charles, you were telling me some stuff earlier about your experience working in Backbone and some of the challenges. What did dropping in router.js do that you couldn't have done in Backbone alone?
The best benefit that we had, which was when you're doing any type of application, is you want that URL bar not to break. And it does such a good job of you know, to use a term from the functional programming world, it makes your application state almost a pure function of the URL. So, and vice versa. It's like this bidirectional relationship. So if you know, you're talking to the router and you make a transition, it updates the URL and vice versa. So that those two are always kept in complete lockstep. But then, and so, you know, that's the first benefit. But then also marshaling all those requests, like we have, you know, in this particular application, in order to display one page, there's about at the minimum 6 AJAX requests that have to happen, and at the maximum probably about 15, all of which they need to happen in a very orderly fashion, and there's basically a dependency graph. But if you look at the way that the models are organized, that dependency is very clearly, there's a very clear hierarchy there that's also reflected in the URL. So being able to tie a segment of the URL to a set of backbone models that are getting loaded, if you drill in to some bit of information that's contained with those models and needing to marshal more resources from the server, you know, having that mapped to the next level of hierarchy in your URL, and if you back away from that, you know, making sure, so then when you do fetch those things, making sure that you don't have to worry about the timing in which those things are brought down. So one of the things that, like the root route, we have to load an application manifest and the translation strings, like for the internationalization. And so we can't really do anything else until those are loaded. And so if you were doing it without a router, you would have to have this, you know, rightward drift where you know have basically contained inside your asynchronous fetching, right? You would realize this hierarchy with rightward drift, with nested callbacks. But instead, the router lets you kind of break that hierarchy apart and then flatten out your requests and say, when this happens, I want you to fetch this, and let it, you know, manage all the dependencies for asynchronous loading. It just unburdens you from having to think about all that stuff. You can think about the hierarchy of your business logic and then loading the appropriate models at the appropriate time. And that's something that, you know, I really came to really love about Ember. And when had to work in Backbone, I knew that almost above all other things, I was going to miss this. We were able to very cleanly bring that over and use it basically without issue. So cool. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Fun to hear that stuff.
So part of that is because of the way that the router.js is structured to resolve promises. It's very promise oriented, and it's really early into promises. Promises people were still figuring out what those were when router.js basically like jumped into the deep end of that pool. What did you see in promises that made you were you instructed to do that, or did you think promises were cool, or did you just see the problem that they solved? Like, why did you couple router so closely to promises?
The way I sort of landed on this was that I was very desperate to be like useful in the Ember community a year ago, and I could
smell your desperation from right here.
Yeah, it's gross. But I remember, I mean, I bugged Stefan Penner, who is still on the core and obviously very, very active, and he was on the core team back then. I was constantly bugging him with like, hey, what about this? What about this approach to handling all this like crazy router nonsense? What about this? And like, I went through so many kind of obviously bad ideas before, I don't know, brute force led me to thinking whether promises could be part of the solution. It was basically just like, well, you start off with a bunch of use cases, and so you jotted out how Gmail works and Twitter works, and when you click something, there a loading spinner comes up, and then eventually when the data is all there, it switches at once versus these other approaches where you click something and it immediately unrenders and starts loading things on the screen. Just like trying to make sense of what was common between all these cases. And the idea of just like, what is a transition? Well, the first phase is collecting all the data that you need to get to that target route. And we would also love for there to be a way to handle errors if these things happen. And then, I don't know, it just sort of clicked that you could imagine that being just a chain of promises. And there's been a few refactors in Router.js and how it internally works, but and that sort of has, that abstraction has been the same for a year or longer, which is basically construct a chain of promises, and then when those all resolve, and those are that chain of promises is gonna call all those before model, model after model hooks that you guys are familiar with, and any of those can return a promise along the way. And once those finally all get through, then boom, just like flush out the entire transition all at once with all of this resolved data. And I don't know, that was the only idea where Steph wasn't facepalming, and that ended up being what was added into Ember as kind of like my first major contribution.
I really like the way that turned out, and I really like the way it gets all at the end of the day gets rolled up into a single promise. Like when I was working with Router.js, the follow redirects method I think was my favorite discovery. of the whole thing.
I don't know what that does.
There's actually some talk of making follow redirects be kind of a default, unless you I don't know, this may be a little too technical.
No. I'm curious about this. So go on.
Well, maybe making it not necessary, but you know, when you do that transition, if you end up doing to another if you inside that transition, you end up triggering another transition, it will reject the promise for the original transition. But off of a transition, there's a method called followed redirects, which will return a promise, which will resolve when either the original transition, and you're going to have to double check me to make sure I understand this.
I think you explained it well.
Or it will fulfill when all resulting transitions have resolved, or if any of them reject, then the original one will reject.
So it's like a router catch, basically.
Yeah. Honestly, I expected the follow redirects behavior to be the default case for the transition. So I was a little bit surprised the first time that I encountered that, but then I was like, oh man, that kind of sucks. I kind of get it. But then I was looking, I found the followed redirects method, and I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's one of these things where like not that when you have something as large as all the async stuff that was worked out when I did all that router work, not every single portion of the API like that, like what happens is a redirect, is that considered a rejection on the earlier transition, mm-hmm. or what do you call that? What does it resolve with? Not all of those things have probably been like officially reviewed, and mm-hmm. even follow redirects is kind of a surprise to some of their core members, and there's talk of making it the default because it's not particularly documented. It's not very often that people run to that case, but it's confusing enough that it should probably just be the default. So, but I still need to kind of talk to some people about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see definitely wanting to have some way of finding out if the original transition isn't where you ended up.
Sure. I think the suggested solution, the alternative was to be have follow redirects be the default. But if at the time, like you often have when you're initiating another transition, you're most likely in a hook that already has reference to the old one. So if you want to be like, no, this is like a bad thing, this is a failure, you didn't provide enough information, then you can always just say transition, like previous transition dot abort, and that would cause it to reject. But if you're just like transitioning away and something sort of supersedes the previous transition attempt, then you know, don't call that a rejection. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it seems pretty stable, right? Like router seems pretty stable at this point. Is it likely that it's going to change much, or do you feel like it's pretty settled? Like it's generally considered best in class. Would you say that there's more stuff? Like, do you have things that you wish you could work on with it, or do you feel like it's settled?
I think there is some major ugliness in the code. So there might be refactors, but nothing really in the API that I would imagine. I'm working on something right now, which is actually kind of related to some query params stuff. Like there's a few giant ugly functions in there that are trying to do way too many things at once. And it is admittedly an extremely tricky problem to solve, but I think I know an alternative way to structure things so that everything can be like better compartmentalized and not living in these behemoth awful things. So Router.js's API is quite stable. It's and we have quite a test suite, and Ember is an additional other side of that test suite, since there's so many Ember specific things that depend on Router.js functioning correctly, that it also gives it that additional sort of testing and validation. So anyway, there will be refactors, but probably nothing crazy API related, because it's kind of shown itself to be have some pretty strong patterns.
And like you said earlier, you do a lot more than just Router.js, but it's a phenomenal library that people are either using or looking to like. It's a cool open source project, and you have other stuff you're doing. And I have a
and it's also it's production ready. We use it in production.
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
I don't want to claim bulletproof, but it's never done anything that surprised me, and it's never not done anything that I wanted it to do. So that was that's pretty uncommon in something that's trying to solve really hard problems like that.
Yeah, there's I am proud of. It's like one of those things. I think the first time I heard this was when I was hearing Disney CGI animators said that their best compliment was when nobody even points out that it was CGI. And there's so many ugly things. It's kind of it's a very dismal micro library to work on sometimes, because there's so many tricky parts to get right, particularly around like minimizing the amount of data reloading when you change routes, but there are parent routes that haven't changed between a transition. So if you've already loaded the list of articles and you're only switching between like showing a specific article and like, I don't know, an about page, it's all like nested under that articles route, then you don't want to reload and rerun the AJAX response on that shared parent articles route, the so-called pivot route of a transition. And there's like a billion corner cases and ways that where it took a lot of work to get that stuff functioning properly. And if people are just using it and not complaining about it, even beyond the Ember sphere, then that sounds like a good thing. Sounds like we've largely nailed it.
So I know we want to keep it at a high level. Can I ask one specific question about a hook in Router.js? And that's when you're transitioning from a nested route to the parent route, you're just literally just taking away a segment of the URL. Is there any callback that you can get at that point? Even though you're still the route is still entered, the model for that route has not changed. You're just kind of exposing. It's just there's nothing under it anymore.
You can't strictly do that. There's always going to be a leaf route. You always have to transition into a leaf route. It's just most likely that leaf route is just a slash for its path, so it adds nothing to it.
Right.
Would that be a transition to index then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Answered
my question.
Yeah. Sure. Do you know which hook to use, though?
You would probably want to use, you'd want to use setup. Probably setup, right?
I guess if we're talking about the target route that doesn't add anything to the URL. Sure. Any of those would be fine.
I feel like that was a test, and Charles, you passed. Barely.
Barely.
So
B minus.
So I wanted to ask a couple last questions. One just about open source in general. Like you devote clearly just a monstrous amount of time to the Ember project and to your open source work. It sounds like you dedicate a day to that. So do you want to, can you tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. I'm not able to put in nearly as much time as I feel like I was able to in the past, because like a year ago I had more of like a freelancy consulting situation. And that left a lot of room to do more Ember stuff. And it's to kind of put in that investment of learning enough about Ember to rewrite its router layer, definitely. And that was like my goal. It was like kind of a job on its own. And since then, I've sort of gone in. So I'm kind of doing full-time work on a new startup, not so much like consulting stuff. And part of the arrangement with that is that I have a day today, actually, to do open source work. And
so would it be fair to say that you sold out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. Trolling Alex and just...
You're just like, wow, he's admitting to all these insults. So easy.
Push back. Well, thanks for using some of that time to talk to us about this stuff. I know that I think it's actually an important library. I think what you've done with it is important. I know that you do other stuff in open source as well. But I think not enough people know about Router.js. I think there's a like sort of a wave crashing. I've heard from people that are like, I don't like how opinionated the router is. It tells me what to do with stuff. Like, I like the freedom to do whatever I want. And I've never met anybody that does that doesn't break the back button. And that's like that's a cardinal sin.
We make it pretty hard to do that.
So, yeah, it's an awesome project. So thanks for all your work on it.
Thank you very much.
Definitely a super super cool contributor and generally super cool dude.
Generally.
So do you have any, are you giving any like conference talks in the future on this kind of stuff? Or are you doing, you know, do you have any like appearances on, you know, film or television that you want to, any Cannes Film Festival appearances on the red carpet with your girlfriend J-Lo?
They're gonna throw me into a cameo for Game of Thrones, but other than that, not really anything at the moment.
That's appropriate, yeah.
No, sorry. I figured I could actually just nail that theme on first try, but fingers failed me.
We'll have to wait for the YouTube video of you playing, brooding over your guitar.
Well, you guys are going to edit out all your bad jokes anyway, so if you could just throw in a sweet
solo.
Oh,
no, they're staying right in there.
Cool.
The world must know the truth. Alex, it's really been awesome talking to you. Is there anything else that you feel like, any open source projects you feel like that are in deserving of more attention that we should be looking into and talking about?
I think I personally have been neglecting React.js, and there's been a lot of positive feeling about it, particularly when it gets into like extremely tight control over the view layer, which sometimes Ember's good at, and other times it leaves you wanting. So I would say I'm going to personally really spend some time digging into that shortly and seeing what all the bustle is about. And you should too, because I hear good things, and simplicity that they're going for is definitely desirable. But then again, I'd also love to see some really giant React.js apps and sort of prove that scalability, which they kind of admit to is not quite there yet. But either way, I'm definitely curious to learn what I can from it and see what good ideas might be absorbable.
Right.
Other than that, I guess related would be, are you guys familiar with Pretender?
Yes.
Yep. We're actually using that.
But we haven't really talked about it at all. Can you pitch it to us?
So just like Router.js is a microlibrary that is composed into the Ember router, there's another one called Route Recognizer, which Router.js also depends on. And it has the very single responsibility of, given a string URL and these previously defined segments that you know how to recognize, break this URL down into like an array of handlers. The concept of a handler, at least at the route recognizer level, is left intentionally vague. It could be like a POJO, it could just be a string. Basically, it has uses beyond what Router.js and Ember specifically have in mind for it. It uses it a certain way, but Pretender is something that Trek from the core team had put together maybe 2-3 months ago that uses Route Recognizer, and Pretender is something that will stub out the AJAX object. What is it? XML? I never remember this thing.
XML HTTP request.
Stubs it out, and basically using a similar mapping, a map DSL for specifying all your routes, you can specify how this stubbed out AJAX object will respond to these requests. So you can basically work entirely on an Ember app that might in the future be connected to a real live server API, but in the meantime, you defined all of these responses through this really nice API that's going to feel very familiar if you've ever used Router.js or Ember or any of these things. And it's very cool. There's definitely some ideas in the future for, well, I mean, I have my own ideas. I haven't talked super at length with people, but I want to see if there's a way that we can use it to almost like the inverse of VCR in Rails world. You guys familiar with VCR?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, yeah.
That's something I've been.
Well, do you know Stanley Sewer, right?
Yep.
So he's doing stuff with us at the front side, and he's working on a library right now that will read out of your fixtures specifically in a Rails app. But so like a reverse VCR would be really awesome to record any request. His plan right now was to use Rails API stuff to spit out Pretender fixtures, and it sounds like that's going pretty well. But I would love to see like an adapter too that would just read,
just any be able
API
to
and right. create a fixture data out of it,
and then just run your tests without actually hitting your server.
Yeah. But we use Pretender a lot, and it's it's early days, but it's definitely the most promising library for this kind of stuff I've seen. It's the most intuitive. The most flexible, really become kind of smitten with it. So I'm with you on that endorsement.
Cool. My vague idea, and I don't know how much merit there is to it, was to be able to capture, let's see, like if you started stubbing out your expected AJAX responses and whatnot, this would sort of request both the data coming in and then what you've stubbed out to respond back to it. And I don't know, either you record the different data types and put that into some JSON object that gets saved to the server somehow, but you would be able to use that for server-side testing. So if you know you've got this Ember app that behaves a certain way, sends these kind of requests and gets these kind of responses, you can at least validate that the data you're sending back is in line with that. So that's an experiment of sort of client-driven API design, and I have no idea how valid that is, but I'd love to give it a shot, and Pretender is kind of a good jumping point.
I really like that idea.
Kind of two-way mirror or something.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, sir. Well, thank you for coming and hanging out with us today and telling us about Rowdy stuff and open source. And it's good time. So thanks for all your work, and thanks for chatting with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yep. All right. Talk to you later.